I'd like for you to think about today, as the sermon goes on, if there's ever been a time in your life where you felt like you had potential or had the potential to accomplish something or to do something, and yet something got in the way. Or if you've come to a place in your life where you've come to some understanding that the potential that you have is simply not going to get expressed, or exercised. That you've come to a place and time that's not for me, that's not going to happen in my life, or somehow you've resigned that part of yourself that simply wanted to be expressed at one point or was a dream of yours at one point, and now it's not. Walter Brueggemann, theologian, he talks about the prophetic imagination. And in the prophetic imagination, he says it is this. And I think if I would hope to do one thing as a person who stands up here and speaks, there would be an aspect to what I would say that would come under this heading, the prophetic imagination. And he has this to say about the prophetic imagination. It is to bring to the public the expression of those very hopes and yearnings that have been denied for so long and suppressed so deeply that we no longer know they're even there. He says that as we do this, and as we activate this prophetic imagination, and as we recall those longings and those dreams that we may have given up and those dreams that we have simply forgotten, he says this about them. Only grief permits newness and those dreams and potentials from coming back. Those who do not want the new are afraid of grief. They deny it to themselves and they suppress it in others. Because grief, mourning, and tears are not expressions of powerless acquiescence. Rather, grief, mourning, and tears function as a radical critique of the present order by bringing what is wrong into conscious awareness. Such mourning refuses to cover up and insists that we confront the brokenness, oppression, failed expectations, and empty promises of the present. Today, we're going to talk a bit about one of our faith ancestors, Margaret Fuller. Quite possibly, Margaret Fuller was the forerunner of the feminist movement, the suffrage movement. We certainly know the story of Abigail Adams, the wife of John Adams, as he's leaving to Philadelphia to begin the process of the independence of this country. She says to him, "Don't forget the women." However, he responds, "We men aren't going to give up our masculine privilege." Now, if that's apocryphal, I'm not sure. Nonetheless, it is a story that I think resonates with many of us men, if I would say. And certainly some would say that the Equal Rights Amendment would be founded in the work and in the words of Margaret Fuller. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever heard the Equal Rights Amendment in its length. The fullness of the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, I've spoke about it and heard it, but I never really sat down and read it through to really get the substance of it, to try to figure out why there's such resistance to it. I could never get that. And here it is. Section 1. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. That's it. That's the amendment. And then there are some words about it will be put in place 2 years after it's ratified. One of the statements in opposition to this by social conservatives was that it would mean we would have to give up power. And I'm going, yes. That's what it would, that's what it would mean. You would have to share power, which you don't have to share now. Yes. Rather than, and this is Margaret Fuller's contention, rather than let us welcome more voices to the decision-making process of how we're going to live. Rather than that, it is the fear of giving up power. From Margaret Fuller. There is much, much in all of us. No one ever calls it out of us unless we are lucky enough to know the very intelligent, imaginative, and sympathetic people who love us and have the magnanimity and to encourage us, believe in us by listening, by praise, by appreciation, and by laughing. My question to us today is, as we think about our own potential and who we are as human beings and our life pilgrimage, can this church become a place that activates those dreams that were lost? Can this church become a place where we can reach out and nurture and strive to reach our potential? Can this place become a place for us where we can feel emotionally safe enough, strong enough in our sense of belonging, that indeed we can begin to activate our dreams and activate our potential again, or even discover what our potential might be? I know that when I first started doing counseling, we all have a few favorite questions we'd like to ask. And I would ask this question, and after a few years I gave it up, because for obvious reasons, I think. I would say, have you ever found a place where you came up to your maximum potential? You came up to your boundary. You came up to the place where you couldn't really stretch yourself any further. Do you know yourself so well that you have found that limit of who you are as a human being? Do we know ourselves good enough to know that? That we found it. We found that boundary. And then when we find that boundary, do we feel ashamed? Do we feel lacking? Do we say, okay, this is who I am, so I know where to ask for help? So I know where I ask to have some consultation? There were many of us in the graduate program that I was in, myself included, that would be labeled learning disabled. And it is amazing that we got into a doctoral program being learning disabled, because most of us were so prideful, we would not share that we were learning disabled. We would hide that we were learning disabled because we were going to sit in the same seminar, in the same class with everybody else on equal footing and deal with it in the same way because of shame. It's a costly process not to recognize our boundaries and our limits for who we are and then be able to ask for help with a sense of at ease. It's a painful process to feel shame for our natural boundaries for who we are. Do we know the maximum of our potential? Have we found a community that will help us reach our potential? And if we have, can I muster up the courage to engage in that community and call the community to its potential in response to me? Our country, is it a place and time where, just a bit of a shift and then I'll come back, where we are not without historical precedent. I mean, we can find what's happening in our country that happened in other countries. As a matter of fact, it happened in the nation of Judea at 587 BCE. In the nation of Judea, you had several things going on. The empire of Babylon was expanding, threatening the nation of Judea. You also had prophets Jeremiah would say to the nation and say to the kings of Judea, would say to the king, if you do not obey your God, you will lose your nation. For several hundred years, this went on. And the obedience was, when you read, was economic justice, when you read it. And so, some people say that, well, Babylon expanded and that was the end of that. That was the end of Judea. Other people say, no, that was not what caused the end of Judea. It was because they were not obedient to their values. And that's what caused the fall of Judea. They were not congruent with their values. And why this is important when we're talking about Margaret Fuller is because she calls us to attention as a nation to our congruence with our values or incongruence with our values. Walter Brueggemann, in talking about the nation of Judea, says they had to go through something. They had to relinquish their old beliefs and receive a new understanding of who they are as a nation and as a people. And in relinquishing the old beliefs is where the grief comes in that Walter Brueggemann's talking about. If you don't do this grief, you can't receive the newness about who you are as a people. And so the grief is pivotal in a transformation process. And I was talking to my stepson the other day, and he was telling me about this woman who did this experiment between comparing 7 and 8 year old children and chimpanzees. And she went to many different cultures, and she found out, and she wanted to see if her thesis was correct across cultures. And what she did in this experiment was, they had this box, and I'm not going to be able to describe this exactly right, but I think you'll get the idea. They had this box where you had to take this stick and you had to move some levers in order to get to the food. Okay? So she gave it to the kids and she demonstrated it, and the kids imitated and got to the food, and the chimpanzees did the same. They imitated and got to the food. So then she came back in the next day or the next week, I forget what it was. And she set it up so that you just simply had, and it made the box transparent this time, where it wasn't transparent before. And you could see that all you needed to do was to lift the lid or open the drawer to get what you wanted to get the prize. What do you think happened when she brought that to the children? The children went through the same routine they needed to do before to get to the prize. The chimpanzees just opened it right up. Now, as he said to me when he told this story, what truth you want to get? Because I thought, how can it be exactly the same across cultures? Brain variation. And I started questioning the whole process. But he said, well, the point, and we were talking a bit about the sermon, And he would say, the point is, we human beings, we will take old strategies and old beliefs and apply it to new situations in which they don't fit. It's like the Buddha story. You come up to a river and you need to cross the river. And in order to cross the river, you build a raft. You get across the river. And then the question goes, once you're across the river, what do you do with the raft? There are those that would pick up the raft and put it on their back and carry it with it. And there are those who would say, well, the raft serves its purpose. I'll just leave it here and go on. And I thought, well, that's the same story as the kids and the chimpanzee. They're using the old model, I'm going to need this, when they really don't need it. So now we get to the question of belief systems. Our human capacity to take beliefs that we've learned that were appropriate historically and apply them to the here and now, which they are no longer appropriate. And we've heard a lot about in these days about the present government, both sides. I believe we don't see a big division, but however we want to think about that, influencing science. And that we're appalled that there would be a political influence of science and to challenge science. How could you do that? Of course we're going to use scientific knowledge in that. However, Margaret Fuller faced a similar situation. And the science of the day of Margaret Fuller said that women were inferior to men. And science, this is 1810 to 1850 she lived, and the science of the day said that women did not belong in the public sphere to deal with community issues and leadership issues and structural issues of how people were going to live. And that's what science was teaching. Edgar Allan Poe says of Margaret Fuller, he says, there are men and there are women, and then there's Margaret Fuller. So I think, well, after reading that, I want to understand that. Margaret Fuller said that the American Revolution, this is 1830, right? The American Revolution has failed. She said the American Revolution has failed because in the documents that we fought for, it said all men were created equal. She took that to mean her. She said, this means me. This includes me. And she said, by 1830, we're still having the science that says that I'm not equal. The revolution has failed, and we need a new revolution. So, she was participating in the Transcendentalist movement, and they created a magazine called The Dial, and in this magazine, you didn't sign your name. So, it could have been Emerson, could have been Thoreau, could have been Margaret Fuller, could have been Hedge, it could have been any number of people who wrote, but you didn't know who was writing. So what Margaret Fuller did was that she wrote something called The Great Lawsuit. She took the language of men. She took the thought processes of men and the patterns of those languages, and she created this debate, this lawsuit. And in this lawsuit, she demonstrated that the people of the day that believed that scientific notion that women were not equal was based on an educational premise, not on a scientific premise, was totally erroneous and totally false. She said that we need to move more toward an androgynous society. An androgyny meaning that in society there are certain functions for men and there are certain functions for women. The problem with, and when you read Emerson and Fuller, the problem with that is we begin to believe we are our functions and that the functions are true and that the functions are scientifically valid. But the functions are based on an educational system, not who we are as human beings. So what she did in her great lawsuit is she presented herself with the function of a man addressing males. And they did not know that that was what was happening. She said, we need to move to the place where we are recognized for who we are as human beings first. We are not our functions, and we need to move into this androgynous process. We need to move beyond how we are gendered in our culture. Margaret Fuller challenged what we now know are called universal truths. Universal truth shapes our universe. And the universal truths of her day were that white males were superior to all. The universal truths were this is the right way to do society. Now we've been here before in talking about universal truths when we talked about Daniel Quinn and we talked about totalitarian agrarianism. That because totalitarian agrarianism at 10,000 BC started to take hold and was an efficient way to operate, which produced a class society, which produced those who own, those who don't own, which produced who was going to control the standing armies to protect this process, but also produced universal truths. And we began to believe those as universal truths, that this is the way it is. Margaret Fuller tore the fabric of the universe. Margaret Fuller said, no, this is not to be the way it is. We, as women, need to be in the public sphere. We need to be included in the decision-making process. Otherwise, you have men, boys, wanting women, girls, and that's who are going to be the mature people of our society. We're going to be run by immature people of our society who are locked in a process That means we cannot move to maturity. And there we stay. So in the year 2008, we can't get past an equal amendment or equal rights amendment saying the United States government is going to treat men and women the same. Period. Margaret Fuller tore the fabric of that universe. The suffrage movement built us a window. Women's right to vote opened the window. If she indeed is part of the founders of a faith tradition, we claim. How do we open ourselves up to her spirit and allow her spirit to move through time and move through history and enter us and change who we are? So that we can be part of the process now that there is a window in the fabric of the universe. We can be a part of the process of opening a door in the fabric of the universe. We can be part of the process that one day where we have a tear in the fabric of the universe, there's a window in the fabric of the universe, there's a door in the fabric of the universe, and we build this house where we know true equality to the point where the house disappears and true equality is just the norm. How do we in our church become part of that process? Intentionally looking at it, understanding, studying it. How do we understand how we've been gendered? Because if that's true, just as Margaret Fuller was fighting to potentialize her gifts, to potentialize her greatness in her own way, am I held in bounded? Am I held in bondage by universal beliefs and gendered beliefs that I'm unaware of? You know, it's been a while, so I'll say it again. The story of the tiger, where the tiger got captured and put in a zoo and walked back and forth and whatever tigers do in a zoo. And then years later, some tree-hugging environmentalists said, we need to let the tiger go. And they let the tiger go, and the tiger behaved as if we're still in the cage. Boundaries of the universal truths, internalizing the belief systems of the oppressor. How many of us know we have potential inside of us that has yet to be actualized? If we know that and we understand that, or we have willingly given up our dreams, then we are functioning under universal truths that are holding us in bondage. And we have become somehow possibly comfortable with those beliefs. Margaret Fuller would have none of that. And her legacy to us is to have none of that. How does this place become the place that we can actualize our potential and who we are as human beings? Tony said it. Talented people here find a place of expression. I was in group therapy as a patient and told this story. And I never had a therapist yell at me. Except once. Probably deserved it more than once, but mostly therapists are kind, so they don't yell at you when they should. Right? That's their job, not to yell at you, but to be gentle and bring you along. But anyway, I was telling a story where I was in a Sunday school class, and I didn't start going to church until I was 16 or 17. So I was in a Sunday school class, so I get in there, right? And I'm new, and this is new territory. And but as they would read the Bible and I'd listen to it, I was real direct. I'd say, well, if that's what it says, you know, that's what you should do. So, which people thought that was odd. But anyway, I was telling a story where I was in this class, and I said, well, there was this time I wanted to say something, but I brought it back and I didn't say it in fear of being made fun of. She went, that is the most evil thing I've heard all day. And I went, This is exactly what we're talking about today. There is something in us that wants to come out. There's something else in us that pushes it back. I need to tear the fabric of my own universe in my own mind. And I need a place and be among people that that's okay. That I can make mistakes. That I won't get it right. That I'll be responsive. That I won't be responsive. That we'll be creative. That we won't be creative. That's the kind of community we're building, where we can tear the fabric of our own inner universe, that when we want to be our best self or that we want to contribute, we actually have something within ourselves that stops us. We need to work past that and then also past others, because if we're working together, I'm doing that and you're not doing that, I'm going to get uncomfortable. So I'm going to manipulate you to repress yourself. If I'm in a state of repression, does that make sense? Oh, I will. You better believe it. Because if you're free and you're happy and your life's really going well and you're working and I'm still stuck in my own self-repression, I'm going to sabotage or figure out some way to do that. How many of you have really tried to make changes, and when you're making personal changes and you're having success, the very people that love you and are the closest to you want to pull you back to the old way?
Right.
Well, that's next Sunday. So. But it's oddly true. What Margaret Fuller did was point to the fact that we humans have the potential to pull truths and meaning from history and impose it on the here and now when they don't belong. That's what she did. And she's saying that we can be better than that and we can do that differently. And I'm also saying that in this church, my experience is we do that differently at times. So as a minister friend of mine would say, let's keep on keeping on.